Hello and welcome to Matchsticks and Microphones for the week of April 5th, 2011. I'm your host Justin Azevedo on Twitter at AzevedoJ, who is with me this evening.
Hi, Haley from Matchsticks and Gasoline, MG underscore Haley on Twitter.
Ryan Lambert from Puck Daddy and Flames Nation, Two Line Pass on Twitter.
And Mike from Hit the Post at hitthepost.ca and Hit the Post on Twitter.
Excellent. So looking nice and sunny outside, very warm, and a spring podcast tonight, I guess, officially. So let's get started.
The smoke.
Start off the smoke, and just a quick review of the games for the Flames this past week. Wednesday, 4-2 loss against Anaheim at home, a 3-2 win in St. Louis on Friday, and a 2-1 win in Colorado on Sunday. But anything, have anything to say about those quickly?
Yeah, the 4-2 loss was that was pretty much the end of it. I mean, they're still mathematically in it. Well, maybe even not by the time you heard this podcast. But yeah, I just thought that loss to the Ducks, they looked kind of shitty, and that was it. Like that was basically when I said, okay, the dream is officially pretty dead.
Yeah, I actually got a chance to go to that game at the Dome, and yeah, they looked really kind of listless. What I noticed out of that game more than anything was Bork. Like, Bork is two steps behind everybody. I don't know what he's doing out there right now. He's either injured or out of condition or something, but he's not really in the play at all.
I blame you for that loss, by the way. You were 5-0 the rest of the season, and then I don't know what you did, but you fucked it up, and
then you made
the team lose.
I'm 5-1 for games attended this season.
So, way to fuck that up. And the most important game of the season is, of course, the one that you lose. But yeah, I mean, I agree. I wrote in a thread that that loss was the ninth nail. If there's 10 nails in the coffin, that was the ninth. The 10th is when they're officially mathematically eliminated. But, I mean, you can't, like, they went 0-4 or 0-1-3 or whatever the fuck against the Ducks this year, and you can't not win. And against the Coyotes too, they went 0-4. You can't have teams in your own conference that you're not getting points against or not winning games against and expect to make the playoffs. Like, that's terrible. That's brutal for all intents and purposes. And like Ryan said, by the time you hear this, they might officially be mathematically eliminated from the playoffs, with Chicago getting a point in Montreal tonight. Unfortunately, PK Subban couldn't score like a minute and 40 or whatever seconds earlier in the third period. They had to waste that one point on Chicago just to fuck us over.
From what I just read, their having gotten one point means that one win by either Anaheim or Chicago eliminates Calgary.
So yeah, we're fucked.
That is correct. Yes, that is.
There's no other way to put it at this point. Yeah. So we'll move straight into the bonfire then, I guess.
The bonfire.
So in honor of Iggy's 1,000th point this past Friday against the St. Louis Blues, where he put up 2 goals and an assist, we decided that, you know, we'll go over our favorite Iggy moments and, you know, the past 13 or 14 seasons of having again around for the Flames. And I mean, he's obviously been one of, if not the largest parts of the franchise that during that time, and almost single-handedly saved the franchise from relocation in the early 2000s. But so personally, my favorite Iggy moment is during the 0-4 run, Game 5 against the Tampa Bay Lightning in overtime. And some have called it his greatest shift. And I mean, it's the shift where he's on the ice for almost 2 minutes, gets his helmet knocked off. He's coming back and forth, up and down, like probably at least 6 times. Takes a couple shots on net, and Oleg Saprykin eventually dishes it in. But just, you know, seeing a player be able to do that, and just, like, he was dominant that entire shift. Like, there was no fatigue. He was, like, skating around with his helmet off, his head just exposed, and still going to the corners, just being badass and, you know, working the puck towards the net, and eventually having Oleg Saprykin knock that in and, you know, 3-2 lead for the Flames after the game. And you know, it always gives me a little bit of goosebumps, chills when I go back and watch that shift on YouTube, and just the way that it's called by Bob Cole as well. It's makes me smile to see that. I mean, it's unfortunate that he probably will never win a cup with the Flames, but that was pretty damn close, and I was very lucky to be able to see that.
If you're gonna start naming you know, all time great Iginla moments, the shift, I mean, it's capitalized as the shift for a reason. You know what I mean? Like, it's just so much what he is, like, what he's always meant to the team is encapsulated in that, like, 2-minute and 12-second shift or whatever it is. It's unreal. My moment is from that same series, or season, I should say, but it was basically a really forgettable, not even remotely important game in the grand scheme of things. It was a Calgary game in Boston, so I got to go, which was very nice.
Yay.
And at the time, the Bruins were really playing like shit. Like, they were off. And the Flames came in, but the Bruins were in the middle of a losing streak. The Flames come in with, like, Turek was hurt. Kiprasov was hurt. So Jamie McLennan starts in net. And
Noodles.
The guy next to me, what you imagine to be a stereotypical Boston sports fan, that was this guy. And, you know, I was there in a, I wasn't wearing a Flames jersey, but I had like a Calgary Flames hat on. And he's like, oh, you hope the Flames are going to win, huh? And I go, yeah. And by the way, the other thing to note here is that there were like 10,000 people there. There was
nobody.
No, it was empty. And so he's like, oh, you're feeling pretty good about their chances? And I'm like, I don't know, you know, backup goalie. They're not an exceptional team or anything like that. And he's like, all right, how about this? $100 to win the game. I will give you 2 goals. And I said, sir, you have yourself a deal. And Cal, like, the puck dropped, and immediately Calgary blew them out of the building. Like, it was crazy. Final score of that game was 5-0. All right. McLennan made, like, 30, 35 saves, something like that. But it was never close. Iginla had 2 goals and, like, just a dominant, like, this is what, like, that game is also kind of, like, I'll never forget that game just because of how good he was. And I know we know the 2004 Flames, they were terrible.
Yeah.
But for Jerome Iginla, as we can say with, I guess, many Calgary Flames teams over the years.
I think we could probably say that about every Calgary Flames team that he's been on, except for maybe the 2005-06. It's pretty clear that Iginla has been, at the very least, the best forward, if not the best player.
Yeah. And that guy, anyway, to wrap up the story, the guy handed me 520s at the end of the first period and never came back. I paid for it last year, though, because
the
5-0
Flames Bruins game that, yeah. If it didn't eliminate them from the playoffs, it came pretty damn close. That was terrible.
Yeah, I remember that because
I paid for it in the end, I guess. But
we had a blogger meetup. Yeah, at Flames Central that day, and God, that game was terrible.
I can hardly even remember that game. Like, thankfully,
there was this random guy sitting at like the front of this, like, Flame Central has like this stage or whatever, but where the big screen is, and this random guy just chugging pitchers of brew, just going at it, and like just
at,
drunk.
Like, 10 in the morning.
Yeah, it's like 10 in the morning. He's just drunkenly cheering for the Bruins. Like, it was hilarious. Like, every time the Bruins scored, he's like, but yes, that was a good day, regardless of the score. But then, of course, they go and beat the Caps the next fucking day. Put up 5 goals in like the first 25 minutes. Fuck.
They'll do that.
Yeah, of course they will, because they hate us. Mike, what's your favorite Iggy moment or Iggy story?
Well, see, this is the thing. Like, it's tough for me to come up with a moment, partly because I'm not good at remembering particular moments, but part of that...
But also, you're racist.
Mostly because I'm racist.
You hate black people.
No, the that is not it at all.
I think it is, actually.
All right.
No.
No? Okay.
Well, that's my mistake, then. I'm sorry. Okay?
I don't know where that came from. But
is definitely getting left in.
I don't know where that came from, but that's not my problem.
You have black friends.
how about we just leave it at, I'm not racist.
Okay, so, that's fine.
So anyway, no, the biggest problem would actually be that I tend to go to these games and, you know, I'll have a few beers and by the end of the game, I kind of forget. So like the Red Mile Run, which is, I guess, what we can talk about because it was a really special time in Jerome's history with the team and just an amazing ton of fun. I went to 3 games over that series and I watched every one with the rest of Calgary, either in a pub or in somebody's house with a big group of people. I can remember the atmosphere and how much fun I had. I don't always remember the end of the games. There was at least one time where me and my buddy ended up on the Hockey Night in Canada intro because we were wasted drunk leaving a Calgary game and cheering into the camera. And I credit Jerome Iginla with every one of those drunks. So there you go. That's my favorite Iggy moment.
A thing that just reminded me of is I was over my friend's house, like, and he lived an hour away. I was like, we got to put, it was during the that 4 overtime game against Vancouver.
Oh, yes.
Oh, man.
And, like, I mean, that game started on the West Coast, so it was getting really late by the time, like, the second overtime started. And all my other friends were like, we gotta get going. And I'm like, no, because it's double overtime. And so we left, and I literally got home just in time for the game winner. Like, I turned on the television, and within a shift and a half, maybe, that game winning goal was scored. And I, like, that's just one of those things, like, I will never forget that ever. It was awesome.
That also reminded me of a story. My dad was in Vegas for NAB, which is the National Association of Broadcasters Conference, and generally these guys travel in packs, so, like, guys from Calgary and guys from Vancouver go down together. And for the game 7, they were at Morton's Steakhouse, and they, like, had this entire section of steakhouse closed, and they had this projector set up or whatever, right? So of course, when there's like 40 or 45 seconds left with when Iggy's skating down the ice, and, you know, he's got like the open net or whatever, just before the sweater's thrown, they're all selling, like, all the Calgary guys are celebrating. They'll be like, oh yeah, fuck you Vancouver, we win, we're better, blah, blah, blah. So the jersey gets thrown on the ice, or the jacket or whatever, so they obviously come back down and score, and Jovanovski does his spaz thing from the box. And the Vancouver fans in Morton's just apparently just, like, they went fucking insane.
Oh,
like,
I would imagine so, yeah.
Like, they started throwing beers everywhere and just, like, fucking giving it to the Calgary guys. So, of course, when Jelena puts it away, like, 3 minutes into the overtime period, Calgary guys just kind of left. They didn't want to deal with the Vancouver guys after. And I think that's absolutely hilarious, because Canucks fans are fucking douchebags, all of them. But, Haley, do you have your favorite Jerome Iginla moment?
Yes. Mine's, I guess, a little bit more recent. It was the last game of the season against Vancouver when he scored his 50th goal. And the whole, you know, Trevor Linden thing, when he went and shook his hand and got the rest of the team to come on the ice and, like, shake his hand. Every time I watch that YouTube video, like, probably once every couple weeks, it's kind of embarrassing. But I don't know. It just was, like, such a perfect moment. And everyone was talking about, like, how great a captain he was and how great a player he was. And it just made me feel warm and fuzzy.
Well, that's like, even like, if you watch it, Linden says to him, you're the best player in the league.
Yeah. And I mean, that's not a
untrustworthy source, I guess.
No, I mean, Linden being head of the NHLPA, or at least the player head of the NHLPA, for as long as he has, and just how respected he was in the league, and for him to say something like that to a guy like Iggy, and Iggy will never acknowledge that he said that. Like, in every single interview that question's ever come up, he's always said, you know, kind of just shrugged it off with a smile or whatever, but he'll never acknowledge that Linden said that, but the entire hockey world heard it, and it makes me smile, yeah, as to watch that and see that happen. And just, like, you know, obviously he's a great guy with the charity stuff that he does with his he donates to $2,000 to Kidsport every goal he scores, and, you know, he's always made himself available for fans too. Like, in the story of him in Salt Lake in 02,
yep,
eating dinner at the restaurant, and he sees, like, these Canada fans or Flames fans, whatever, and they're like, oh yeah, Iggy, how's it going? Oh yeah, we're sleeping in the back of our cars. And then, of course, like, he just goes and he finds the guys a hotel room for the rest of the Olympics,
which couldn't,
right,
have been easy.
No, I mean, Salt Lake City's not a big place, and especially to have
the
entire world there.
In the middle of the Olympics,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
The
Olympics. And I mean, I'm sure that cost probably just a stupid amount of money, but that's the kind of guy he is, right? He just does it. Like, he doesn't have to think about it. And I don't really like a lot of Eric Francis' stuff. In fact, I think he's kind of an idiot, but there was...
That article was so good, though.
Yeah, that article is so good. And Mike, you might not know what we're talking about, but there's an article when Francis was first starting in the journalism business. He was assigned to Kamloops to go watch the Blazers play, and, you know, I think this is before, or no, this is right after he became Flames property in the Nuendijk trade. So he goes to watch the games and, you know, just kind of scout on the report on the on Iginla. So Iginla's driving, like, this beat up YJ whatever, and one of the first questions that Francis asks, like, oh, you know, what are you going to buy a new car with your money? And he's like, no, you know, it's fine. I mean, doesn't have any rust on it. Maybe some new tires. And this guy's going to sign, like, $1.5 million entry level contract. And he's just like, oh yeah, I don't need to do anything to it. But I mean, he's obviously just, I mean, this sounds like I'm just blowing him right now, but it's great guy and obviously the face of the franchise and a great representative of the city of Calgary.
Definitely. Just can't say enough good things about Jerome Iginla. Like, as a player, as a person, he's what you want everybody on your team to be.
The guy's all class. I mean, as much as Justin gushes, like, you know, he's a great player and he's been an amazing asset for Calgary and a great ambassador for the game, right? So I have a ton of respect for him, and yeah, hopefully he plays a couple more seasons and puts up some good points.
And I mean, I'm sure this season the trade talk will start up again. This offseason, just because he is the Flames' most, I guess, their best asset at this point in time. And with the Flames looking like they're not going to make the playoffs for a second in a row, I guarantee those questions will start coming out again. And I mean, maybe a little bit less, given that he's going to score probably 85 points this year instead of the 69 that he put up last year. And I mean,
40 goals. Hopefully.
Yeah, exactly. And he'll get to his fourth 40 goal season in his career. I mean, I would like to see him finish his career here, never like just stay here the entire time. But realistically, I want him to win a Stanley Cup more than that. And if he has to go somewhere else to do that, so be it, as long as he retires the Flame.
So you are one of those people then that like doesn't think Ray Bourque is a scumbag for asking out of Boston to go for the Avalanche then?
Well, for asking, I think he is a scumbag. But if management comes up to Jerome and says, because I don't think Jerome will ever ask for a trade. Like it,
right.
If management comes to Jerome and says, you know, here's a couple teams that we'd like to trade to you two to try and get this championship or whatever, then yeah, I think that's fine. I mean, the thing with Bourque too is like, you know, he was so beloved in Boston, and I mean, you live there, so you know a little bit more about this than I do. But like, what was the reaction when he actually? When that information came out, not when he won the Stanley Cup, but when it came out, you know, he asked for the trade to the Avalanche.
I would imagine that just given the reaction and the fact that people were still like wearing Ray Bourque jerseys to like get, like even buying Avalanche Ray Bourque jerseys, like I'm serious. There's I'm sure a ton of people all over this city that have them like stashed in their closet somewhere. And everybody was all pro Ray, but that was like kind of a weird time because not to get too far into it, I guess, but there was always this perception in the city that no matter how much money the Bruins ownership spent, that he's nickel and diming us. He's not spending enough money. But the actual fact was that he was spending more than enough money just on shitty players. Like he gave Martin LaPointe like $5 million a year for 5 or 6 years, something crazy like that when he was well past his prime. It was really bad. And he just would do that all the time. I don't think the Bruins got much of a return for Bourque either, to be honest with you. But
the trading thing, it makes it, the salary cap makes it obviously a lot more difficult.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the other consideration that obviously Bourque didn't have to worry about. But yes, 3 years of Martin LaPointe for the Bruins. And I understand this is totally off topic, but total of 83 points. For $15 million.
Oh, that's excellent production then.
But the point is that there was this perception in town, regardless of reality, the Bruins didn't spend enough money, and that was kind of what made Bourque want to leave, and you know, just ridiculousness, obviously. But yeah, no, the point is they love Bourque to this, like he could, you know, he could run over the mayor's dog and everybody would be like, well, what was that dog doing in the middle of the street?
With Jerome, I don't think it's out of the question that he'll probably play till 40. I mean, he is one of the best conditioned athletes in the entire league, if not the best. And in terms of injuries, he really hasn't had any. Maybe he will break down as he gets older, but he has the stamina. He's got the skill to definitely play till then. And I mean, I don't think that it's out of the question to maybe 1,200 or even 1,300 points by the time he's done.
Yeah, well, I think goals. A decent comparable for him would be Mark Recchi, who's, you know, 42, 43 years old right now, and he's still putting up like 40 points a year, playing, you know, a completely different role from what I guess you would think of Mark Recchi in his prime is doing. But
yeah, and you know, some people say the first thing to go out of players is the hands, but I mean, with snipers like him, though, that they're around quite a while. And I mean, even his 1,000th point that we saw was that snapshot, one-legged thing from the top of the circle. Like,
oh, that was vintage again. Like,
how many
so
times
awesome.
Has he scored that goal?
Yeah.
Like 300?
That's perfect.
Well into his decline, he'll be scoring those goals. And obviously, we all love Iggy and for what he's done for the city and this team. And, you know, yeah, I think that's probably the best way to put it.
I guess the whole thing with injuries is he's the type of player that would never want to kind of use that as an excuse, you know, so even if he was injured, maybe we wouldn't even really know because he wouldn't be saying, I had a bad game because I was injured or something like that, right?
Yeah, and that's
you
another
know,
he's
thing. He's always like strives to be the best he can be.
And that's another thing is that he's always taking the blame for the team's failures. Like it's whenever he talks to the media, it's always, you know, this is my fault because I didn't do enough. He never puts the blame on anybody else. Mm-hmm. And once again, like
that, although, you know, how much of that is a product of the fact that when the team was really bad, he was the only guy that would have to be counted on to do anything.
Yeah. Mike went back, said, you know, classy guy. And I mean, that's probably the number one thing is that he never deflects the blame. He's always blaming himself, and that's extremely admirable in that position.
There's a story about how when he was filming the Olympic commercials, did you guys hear that one? How they wanted him to say, "I'm proud to captain Team Canada," and he wouldn't do it because it hadn't been announced yet or something.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. And he wouldn't even say, like, "I'm proud to be on Team Canada," or like something like that, because it hadn't even been announced, even though it was pretty obvious he was going to make the team. But yeah, it's just another example of how humble he is, I guess.
I'll, you know, just to sum everything up here, Jerome Iginla, pretty swell guy.
Yep.
Pretty decent dude. Kind of pretty good at hockey too. I don't know. Maybe that might not be objective, obviously, as a Flames fan, but I think he's pretty good. So anyways, we'll move into our next segment.
The Kindling.
So the last Kindling of the regular season, and two games this next five or so games for the Flames. Tomorrow against Edmonton in Calgary. That starts at 7:30 p.m. Mountain Time, and Vancouver on Saturday, 8 o'clock on HNIC, and that'll be it for the Flames. Regular season at the very least, depending
on
what happens in the Anaheim and Blackhawks games, but that'll probably be it for the season as well, that Vancouver game. So
it's just a shame that the last game of the season always seems to be against Vancouver, and except for that one year where they beat them 7-1, where Jerome got his 50th goal, they've lost ever since, I think.
I think the Flames elimination number is one at this point. And so even if somehow through some miracle Anaheim and Chicago both fail to win any of their remaining games, I have no faith in Flames' ability to beat Vancouver in Vancouver. Just none whatsoever.
Yeah, the Vancouver game's here in Calgary.
I have no faith in the Flames' ability to win
against Vancouver's second line. Like, I expect them to bench or at least play very limited time for all their starters, right? Like, why would you use them against Calgary?
No faith in the Flames' ability to beat anybody in the Vancouver organization. I don't know. I don't care if they call up their ECHL team. They're not going to beat them. It's not going to happen.
I'm worried about Edmonton tomorrow. I don't know about you.
After they demolished Vancouver on the weekend, I don't know.
Yeah, and then took the last game to the shootout, and maybe Edmonton's not exactly an automatic win or whatever.
No team is an automatic win for Calgary this year.
That's a very good point. Very fair.
Yeah.
Because Calgary's not very good.
No.
Sucks that the last game has to be against Vancouver and will likely end the season on a sour note. But
that's the only thing I want for the rest of the season is just to beat Vancouver. Crossing my fingers, probably not going to happen, but still, I would like
to see
that.
By some miracle, it's possible.
Who knows? Vancouver's just a bunch of assholes, all of them. The fans, the front-running douchebags they are, and the entire team, the entire organization, even to the ownership. I hate them all. Fuck them.
Basically. And they're annoying already.
I really like the Sedins, though.
do you like this way the Sedins play, or do you actually like the Sedins because they're clones?
They are awesome people. If you watch the videos of like them in the dressing room or whatever, they're very funny guys, and they are obviously incredible hockey players, and I've always liked the Sedins. There's never been a point at which I didn't.
To that point, I guess, with the awesome hockey players thing is that their zone starts this year, and I'm sure you've read this around the internet, is they're above 70%, so they're obviously getting some percentages, and that's obviously credit to Vanjie and the management team there to be able to structure a team to have Malhotra with a 25% zone start and be able to shelter the Sedins like that. And I mean, the Sedins are actually negative in terms of their zone possession. They start in the offensive zone about 70% of the time, and they end in the offensive zone about 50. So, you know, but I mean, you got Malhotra there to do the 25, and then it ends up at 48 or something. So that's pretty ridiculous. And I mean, Kessler, obviously, perennial Selke candidate. So
what an amazingly constructed team that is.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, for real. Because they've had, I think the stat I read was they've used 14 defensemen this year.
That sounds
and
correct.
The President's Trophy.
Yeah.
How is that possible?
I have no idea. And even to make that work with the cap,
it's unreal.
Like how many? Obviously, all their defensemen haven't gone on LTIR, but to be able to do like have that rotation, there's no way the Flames would ever be able to do that just because they're right up against the cap. So. Credit to Mike Gillis.
Gillis is a genius. Yeah. I think people need to start talking about him as like one of the best GMs in the league.
Oh, no question.
He squeezed the Sedins in at well below market value. And, you know, you can say he overpaid for Luongo, but...
Well, even Kessler.
Luongo, he's the best. Physically, he's the best goalie on the planet.
Well, even Kessler, so. I mean, like $5.2 or $5.1 million a season. And the guy's
you
want
to talk about a good contract, Alex Burrows.
Oh, that's ridiculous as well. Like, what is he making? Like $2.5 million, and he's putting
up
40 goals?
I think it might be even less than that. I think it's 2.25. But
ridiculous.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, what
an
amazing job.
That's almost Glenn Cross money.
Ugh. Glenn Cross. That'll be another thing we'll talk about, I'm sure, coming up in the offseason, but fuck that guy as well.
They've been successful despite, you know, all those major injuries to their defensemen, and their GM is so darn good.
Fucking Vancouver. But I think that'll do it for this week. Haley's on Twitter at @MG_Haley, matchsticksandgasolina.com. Ryan's on Twitter at @2linepass, @PuckDadAinFlamesNation. Mike on Twitter at @HitThePost and HitThePost.ca. I'm on Twitter at @AzevedoJ. Everybody have a good one, and we'll talk to you next week.